Blog Talk Radio.
Pretty live. Well, I'm sharing greetings. Welcome to the second edition of the Joe of the Rising Up Public Afro Radio, PGR Radio. I'm your host, Bumani Shakir. First of all, I'd like to tell you a little bit about the division of government, some of the things we believe in. One, we believe that exploitation and oppression of blacks in North America by whites in North America has entered a more vicious and visible stage. Two, blacks in North America are in serious danger of extermination like Native American, Indian. Three, African-born in America and survive and liberate ourselves, do we understand that our problem was created by all-white government, USSA, and is being continued by an all-white government. Four, individual organization, no matter how rich or large, cannot wage a correct struggle for survival and liberation against the United States government. Five, we can only survive and liberate ourselves by becoming real black nationalists and building ourselves a nation that will be able to wage the correct struggle for our survival and liberation. Six, we should be the ones to determine our own destiny. We should know that self-determination. Seven, we must stand ready to defend ourselves against our enemy by any means necessary. Eight, we must support our liberation struggle and the liberation in general of the African continent. Nine, the economic needs of our nation will be met and profits will be shared equally. Ten, the Rising Government wants all black people to help us make the Republic of Africa the black nation, a nation that will govern black people. On the last show, we talked about things that were significant in the history of Republic of Africa that happened during that month. One thing significant happened during this month is the bond of Queen Mother Moore. Queen Moore has a legacy. Now, Queen Mother Ali Moore born on July 1, 1889, New Iberia, Louisiana. The granddaughter of Nora Henry was born into slavery. Nora Henry was the daughter of an African woman who was raped by a white slave master. Queen Mother Moore's grandfather was lynched before the eyes of her grandmother, leaving her with five children. Younger, these five were Ella Johnson, who became Queen Mother's mother. She died in 1904, leaving Queen Mother, who was five at the time, and the eldest, responsible for the care and upbringing of her younger sisters. Okay. But while Queen Mother's former education consisted of 3 years of schooling, her human rights struggle for survival as a captive African in America began at the tender age of 12, fighting off the advance of her white captives in the South. She has been struggling ever since for the human rights of all African people throughout the world. Consequently, she has become a living legend of her own time. Her efforts in the human rights struggle for self-determination and freedom have always been both national and international in scope. She had dedicated her life to the philosophical principle of self-determination for all African people. Her incessant demands for reparation for those American African descent whose ancestors were the victims of the Holocaust of the American slave trade in the Middle Passage has widened the dimension of black liberation struggle throughout the black diaspora. Her efforts on behalf of the Scott River Nine mark a new departure for the black human rights struggle in the United States. As an organizer in the Garvey movement, she enlisted support of over 3,500 people to defend with guns Garvey's right to speak in New Orleans. She won the first investor in Garvey's Black Star Line, a Mark Garvey honored guest when the historic luncheon took place in New York. All was well of the intention dimension of human rights struggles of Africa throughout the world. Queen Mother Moore campaigned for the aid to Ethiopia against Fascist Italy, declared one bomb means of defense to Ethiopia and yet another African Holocaust. When the liberation struggle and king were brutally suppressed by the British, Queen Mother organized led a delegation to the British embassy to protest the British ultimatum given to the Mama to surrender unconditionally or be annihilated. Until the destruction by fire, Queen Mother was president of the Eloise Moore College of African Studies, a vocational and industrial school of Mount Addis Ababa, founded to treat oppression and psychoneurosis. She has laid the crucial foundation for the development of a philosophy of black liberation, which we must all continue by instituting the African historical monuments memorialized in 100 million Africans who perished in the slave trade. Her contributions have been responsible for making the demands of reparations, self-determination, and her political definition of African America as a non-self-government nation have become integral to the Black liberation struggle. Whether her cat the country or abroad, Queen Mother was always in the forefront of the struggle for freedom, land, and reparations. As a founder of the Provisional Republic of Africa, she institutionalized the struggle and blazed the path for those who followed. Now, Queen Mother was the first time Declaration of Independence that gave birth to the Provisional Republic of Africa. She also was an early cabinet member. You know, we're gonna have a special guest join tonight. We're gonna have Dr. Filet. All right, welcome Dr. Filet on to the show. Greetings, so how you doing?
Greetings. How are you, my brother?
I'm doing well. Tell a little few about yourself before we start. So introduce yourself. Tell a little few about yourself, who you are.
Well, my name is Sister Empress Filet Chionesu, also known as Empress Chi and Dr. Filet. I am the originator, the architect, founder, whichever you prefer, of the original historic Million Woman March that took place here in Philadelphia in 1997. And since then have also become the president general of what is also known as the Universal Movement of the Million Woman March and a Million Black Women Rising Federation.
Okay. Interesting.
Yes, yeah, more than interesting, brother, because a lot of people know very little about the Million Woman March, and it's unfortunate because people that talk about our history and the appreciation of it, you would think that they would have taken the time or more time to know about the largest gathering in the world of any women, and particularly organized by a Black woman initially that was able to inspire, mobilize thousands of other Black women, but initially was started by one Black woman. My initial finances was the first finances I emptied out my bank account. The principles from which the Million Woman March was founded on and remained on was self-determination. And over these years, we have continued to do the work, even though it's been very difficult, because we've never had a grant. We've never had corporate sponsoring. And we certainly could have, but knew from the very beginning that our ancestors gave a very clear and strict direction on how we were to proceed. And nothing like that had ever been done before manner. So, again, you would think that our people, and again, I'm talking about the ones who are scholars, historians, enthusiasts in terms of struggle, you would think that over these past 24 years, there would have been more of an embracing, more of an invitation. You have many historically Black colleges. You have other colleges that have women's studies departments, as well as African and African-American studies departments, Black studies departments. But only two in 24 years have extended an invitation to welcome myself or others who are appointed to represent to speak at any of these colleges during Black History Month or Women's History Month. So my point is that this really brings us to Queen Mother Moore, because she was a fighter, and that puts it mildly. She was a warrior queen. And it took me a while to understand, overstand some things about her that I didn't initially. And that was, you know, this kind of this hardness from an exterior standpoint to a degree where, you know, it could be viewed in a certain kind of way. But what I realized in later years after experiencing it myself, that women in the movement, over the past 50 years that I can actually document, the treatment, but the appreciation or the embracing is very interesting. And as a result, serious, strong black women had to really be even a little more assertive, because the circles that they were in were very much male-dominated. And I'm talking about even within the movement, and this is stuff that most don't want to talk about, but again, because I come from that spirit of Queen Mother Audre Moore, I can say it and will.
There really some very profound history, especially in regards to the new African women struggle. You know, because it's very important that that we understand the basis of our nation is to have new African woman and new African man to build a nation and move forth in the tradition of our ancestors, move forward to be able to be as productive. And it also, like you said, there are various contributions that you have sisters don't present it, actually be engaged and involved with, that are very detrimental to our character that we know these things. You know, understand that there's a campaign going on called We Charge Genocide. Tell them about their program and tell us how it relate to Queen Mother Moore, how it relate to your struggle in general, and how it relate to our struggle as a people, on your own viewpoint, your own philosophy.
Absolutely. And it's very interesting, my brother. And again, thank you for inviting me to have this dialogue and to bring this information, et cetera, because there are things that need to really be said as well as done. But to answer your question, first of all, my struggle is our struggle. Our struggle is my struggle. So even though I have a representation in, you know, various arenas and various circles, the bottom line is that it has always been about us. Even though I represent Million Woman March, anybody that really took the time to look at it closely and to understand it, they would have known from day one what the intent was and has been since its conception. And that was the liberation of our people, period, by any and all means necessary. And so the strategic modes of operations that were demonstrated should have been seen and understood, particularly by those who have a certain type of experience. Why would I not allow corporate sponsoring? I got offered thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars for large corporations to advertise, to have their signs or their information available at the Million Woman March. And I refused it. And I had ran into a lot of problems with people who felt I should have done that. You see, so there was a lot of internal struggles, which some heard about later, but it was very interesting that even people who I thought were about independent, the demonstration of a certain caliber of striving to be in a self-determination mode, I thought that was understood by those who say they, you know, are about that, but come to find out when that money started being presented and I wasn't embracing it, then I created additional enemies. So, again, those experiences helped me to understand, overstand Queen Mother Moore. Because I was doing research about her and other black women when I started the Million Woman March, because I had already been doing independent study for years. And because I had my own daughter and was around other sisters that had daughters, I saw that there was a void in terms of women being organized to the degree of really being progressive and profound. And not, you know, to necessarily be that of another organization. And don't get me wrong, of course, I'm a part of several organizations. But I'm saying as black women, where's the representation as black women? And see, Queen Mother Moore did that. She started the Ethiopian Women's Federation, you see. So what I'm talking about is not feminism. So let's make that clear right now. That was never anything that we advocated for or represented or none of that. It was an easy way for others to try to discredit us, to make it seem less than what we were in our work. But we've never embraced any type of white women's anything, period. And that was one of the reasons why it was also so profound. Again, how do you bring 2.5 million black women together physically and then another 10 million virtually? Do that. You see, so we missed many, shall I say, or a few missed some very clear and intricate things. We talk about ancestors. We talk about divinity. We talk about, you know, but when it's right in your face, you don't want to recognize it. So, again, the same thing was with Queen Mother Moore. And began to get the support that she needed, ultimately. But the work that went into that, many don't talk about that. The fact that she had to do a lot of traveling, a lot of in the community, organizing in the community around very key issues. Of course, the Scottsboro case and, you know, the war at that time, et cetera, et cetera. So, again, most women during that era, the issue or the focus was on civil rights. Most of the women that we talk about in terms of freedom fighters or struggle, their connection was primarily to the more well-known civil rights groups, organizations, NAACP, blah, blah, blah. Queen Mother Moore, of course, stood out because her position was always clear. It was always very pro-black, very pro-African. Again, she was a Garveyite. So this was all, you know, this was a part of who she was and what she represented. So you can imagine how that kind of, you know, went up against the status quo and the kind of fight that she had to deal with doing that. Now, no, Queen Mother Moore was going to the United Nations in the 1950s. Most know nothing about that. Now, I've just recently learned, of course, that in 1951, and going back to your question, Brother Bomani, 1951, Paul Robeson took the We Charge Genocide petition to the United Nations. Most know very little about that. They're familiar with the phrase, We Charge Genocide, but don't know the history. And again, 1951, Paul Robeson and others took the petition to the United Nations. Now, at the very same time, the NAACP was getting ready to do that too. Because, again, you have to remember there were a lot of clashes going on in terms of struggle, representation of the Communist Party, representation of the Negro civil rights thing. So there was a lot of, as there is today, competition. But Paul Robeson and his group, which was backed by the Communist Party to a great degree, was able to get this thing through. So during that time era, if you were trying to do something progressive, where were you going? You see, so to have allies was almost absolutely necessary. The bottom line is, 1951, December 17th to be exact, Paul Robeson delivered the We Charge Genocide petition to United Nations officials. That petition is groundbreaking because in 1951, how do you compile hundreds of names, dates, the ages, the locations of our people who were murdered, beaten, hung, brutalized? This is the kind of statistics data report that Paul Robeson and his team took to the United Nations in 1951. And then William Patterson, who was the co-kind of founder or organizer, he went to Paris, France. Because if you understand the UN operations in terms of international courts, there is a protocol and a process, which is why our We Charge Genocide 21 will take us between 3 to 5 years. And this is kind of how you can give an indication in terms of, you know, if people say to you, We Charge Genocide and we get ready to do something, if they're saying they're going to do that like this month and maybe next month or whatever, and not under and not convey that this is a lengthy, in-depth process, just like the fight for reparations. If that's not being conveyed, then you need to deem it a suspect. So we know that it will take a good 5 years to do what we're doing. Now, again, we charge genocide. Ours is 21 so that we are differentiated between anything and anyone else. We are in the 21st century. The other we charge genocides were, the main ones were the 20th century. We're in the 21st century. We also are not just focusing on police and governmental terrorism. We're focusing on 21 points, 21 areas of genocide, mass incarceration, gentrification, homelessness, environmental racism, political prisoners. Now, just to give you a general idea, these are crimes against humanity that we'll be presenting to the world, and in that demanding reparatory justice. Now, we use formulas in a lot of our work. So, again, that we can be identified as to who and where this is coming from. So our presentation of We Charge Genocide 21 has a other component that is connected called ARA, the letter ARA, the number 4, and the letter J. Because many that have come before us have taught us we have to think in a very logical, pragmatic, optimistic, but also intelligent manner. Meaning we use formulas to identify some of our work because we think in the context of mathematics. So the R4J represents reparatory justice in four areas. So it's not just saying reparations. That's become a real, you know, interesting buzzword. Ours is, yes, reparations, but also restitution, also retribution, and, of course, restoration, all that have to be placed in full remedied format. So, again, when you say reparations, and this is why for some the question will, how's that going to be? And this and that. You have all these other folks to be, you know, trying to ask questions. Some of them really are trying to get information, and some is just, you know, bullcrap. They ain't got nothing else to do or waste your time. But what we want to make sure we present to the masses of our people is we've thought this thing out very carefully. And so day and age in the 21st century, we have to make certain that we have structure that is sound and doable. So again, when we say strategic operations, reparations, how's that going to happen? What's the plan of action? The We Charge Genocide helps to produce that because we are going to reenact what Paul Robeson did in December of 1951 when we take 400 plus delegates to the United Nations to deliver our first 1 million signatures, along with what is known as a letter of intent. So we're not taking a petition at this time. We are doing a legal process called notification. The notification is in the format of letter of intent. So we are issuing to the United Nations representing 400 plus groups, organizations, concerned individuals, et cetera, et cetera. 400 plus because it's 400 plus years. Therefore, we are presenting to the United Nations a 400 plus delegation with our first 1 million signatures to back it up that says we are preparing to file formal charges against the United States government for crimes against humanity as described and prescribed in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. This is groundbreaking because this is not just a statement. Indeed. This is a direct action. And it's phase one, to notify the United Nations. Why the United Nations? And some people say, oh, why are you going to the United Nations? They ain't going to do nothing. Is, and particularly I say this to sisters, because it's a black woman, I can speak for a black woman, and that is, what legacy are you going to leave your children, our children? What will you be able to tell your child, your grandchild, that this is what we did in this day and age, so that when their time comes, they're not starting from scratch again. You see, so for those that want to say, well, that's not going to do nothing, they ain't going to do nothing, fine, do you. Don't worry about this. Do you. But we know clearly what we're doing and why and what we must show the world. We have that obligation and responsibility. And so, okay, again, on September 4th, that's the first phase, we'll be assembling at the United Nations. On that day, it is the kickoff for the boots on the ground for our first 1 million signatures. At that point, people will be able to go online. They'll be able to download the Google form. They'll be able to go to our website. But also, we want folks to make a commitment to get 9 signatures and your own, 10 signatures, 10 signatures. You see, that anybody can do that. There's other things that folks can do, obviously, but minimally we're saying, you really care about this thing? We just need 9 signature plus yours. That's asking too much. Then, hey, we all need to just open up the gas chamber and walk in.
Okay.
So on September 4th, that's when it gets kicked off.
Okay. I actually have one question there. I'm gonna let the co-host, Minister Akin Bekele, come on and talk to you. My question is, how would an individual go about getting involved or actually participating or contacting you all in regards to this situation? And also, is there any type of study session that takes place in regards to educating individuals who has little knowledge of this situation?
Absolutely. What's happening right now, my brother, and thank you for asking those questions, because several things are happening. One, we are formulating both task forces that will be specifically geared to the immediate goals and objectives as well as those that are protracted. So in every city that we can, in every state that we can, we are formulating what we call Black Human Rights Collectives, cadres, committees. But the focus has to be Black Human Rights. Now, within those cadres, there are subcommittees. So again, for the past year, we have held monthly meetings online, Zoom meetings. And I think you were, I know you were a presenter on at least one of our monthly virtual meetings. So we've been, for the past year, intensively making information available every single month, usually 3 to 4 days, providing information not just about the We Charge Genocide Project in itself, but history, information and reports that are current, projected, and things of that nature. There have been training sessions for those who are interested in becoming members of the Black Human Rights Movement. They get materials, meaning resource information. They get access to our other kinds of study sessions and so forth. Because, you know, once if a sister, brother, sister identifies that they really want to be an advocate, an activist, et cetera, then they get other types of information because there's certain, guidelines and other things that people have to, coordinators have to be aware of when we begin to proceed within the United Nations circle. And so I can give information on how they can contact us about that. But this month, what We Charge Justice Now virtual forum kicks off on Saturday, July 25th. This is our Queen Mother More Week. We do something every year. We've done something every year for at least 20 years in regards to Queen Mother More, because she's one of our what we call sister saints. MWM has a sisterhood and a body, and within that body, we have 20 sister saints, and Queen Mother More is one of them. So she's not only Queen Mother More for us, for the MWM sisterhood and the brothers in support. She is a saint. See, we've deemed her a saint, along with Mother Callie House. They're both saints in our world and in our minds. So, again, this coming week, starting on Saturday, we kick off our Queen Mother More week. The whole week will be up to the 30th, almost a week, up to the 30th of July. Every day there's going to be information about Queen Mother More and or about reparatory justice, reports. You know, people will be calling in who either knew her or, you know, admire her work, their comments, et cetera. So, again, for roughly 5 days, there's going to be, and, of course, her Earth Day is coming up on the 27th. We will probably have on that day Dr. Dolores Blakely, who will just share information about the years, the many years that she spent with Queen Mother More, particularly the travels to Africa, you know, and things of that nature, to so that we can really let people see the international connections that Queen Mother More had all over the world in her work. And then lastly, I had the opportunity, because we had hoped that she would have been able to join us for the Million Women March in 97. Unfortunately, of course, she made transition in May of 97. I did have the opportunity to go to the Going Home services. And I tell you, that was an eye-opener because, and I'm going to leave it at that, because this is something that we'll get into at another time. But to go to a Going Home service for someone like Queen Mother More, and the women who were speakers were not allowed to speak at the pulpit, or whatever you want to call it, at the area where the men and the ministers speak at. The women couldn't speak in that area. The women had to speak on the floor level. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe this. But this demonstrates to you, again, the reality of some things. This is Queen Mother More's Going Home services, and you got women cannot speak. And I'm going to tell you who one of those women were. I was there. I saw it. Sister Mother Sonia Sanchez. And see, the relationship to Mother Sonia and Queen Mother More was like none other. From what we were told, Queen Mother More wanted Sister Sonia to write her autobiography. Because Queen Mother lived in Philadelphia for a while, you see. And so when she went up to speak, and then they told her, no, you can't speak here. You got to speak down here. You got to go over there. What? Are you serious? But, yeah, I saw it with my own eyes. So I digress, but I'm saying, I'm pointing these things out because when I met with Baba Kwame Ture a few months before his transition, he helped me to know and understand why it was so necessary to create a women's wing for the AAPRP. It's real stuff, and people got to deal with it. If we're to move forward realistically, we have to address the chauvinism, the misogyny, and the other behaviors that are adverse to the development of the liberation of our people.
Well, indeed. You know, I want to thank you for coming to our platform and show you how to understand. Thank you for working your committee in the past, present, and the future. It is time I can turn over to our other co-host, Minister Aki Bekele, so he can ask you questions or know and share information with you as well. And I appreciate you, sister. Relax.
Great, great. And one other thing, again, if people want information, please feel free to contact us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, national spelled out, mwm@aol.com. Also, you can text us or call us at area code 267-636-3802. Again, 267-636-3802. Donations are greatly appreciated. We have a Cash App as well as a PayPal. You can Cash App us at any time at $HOT1111. Again, $HOT1111. Actually, tomorrow is what we call $2 Tuesday. We got folks that donate every Tuesday $2. But you can donate any time and any amount. And also, you can use PayPal. Our PayPal account goes to our National Black Human Rights Project, and so the email address for PayPal is brproject@gmail.com. Again, nbhrproject@gmail.com. Thank you, my brother.
Okay. Brother Akin Bukati, your line is open, brother. Go ahead, brother. Introduce yourself.
Free the land. Free the land.
Free the land, brother.
I am, as Minister Bumani said, co-host of the show. I just wanted to get on and just introduce myself. I am the Minister of the Interior for the Provisional Government of the Republic of New Africa. And I just wanted to say I was really interested hearing about We Charge Genocide 21 and some of the things that you're doing. I guess one question I would like to ask, in preparing to go to the World Court or whatnot, what were some of the things that you researched in order to know the proper procedures in order to, you know, go and do it the right way? Because for those of us that have learned about that at all, we know that it all boils down to the proper procedure when you address those types of courts. So what type of preparation did you do for that to be able to know that you had the right procedures in trying to get that done?
Wow, Brother Hu, that's an excellent question. Thank you for that. you know, when I was in college, I had two majors. Well, one was a major, one was a minor. I was a religion major. I went to college, believe it or not, because I, you know, wanted to deal with spirituality, divinity, blah, blah, blah. So my major was religion. I wanted to be one of the first, if not the first black woman theologian, not minister or whatever. I literally wanted to be a theologian. Anyway, so from that, I also had a minor, and the minor was law. So at a very early age, I was studying law, right? And so it just so happened, Mumia Abdul-Jamal, I knew him before all of this other stuff going on, and I happened to have been one of his legal runners once he was locked up, you know, once he was almost murdered. I was literally one of his legal runners. I used to go up to the prison, and, you know, he would give me instructions to go back on the street. This was before the hearing, or before the actual trial, right? So my point is, my interest in law has always been what it is. However, that case, that situation turned me away from law. I gave it up. I no longer wanted to pursue it. So ultimately, becoming more involved in struggle, I realized that it was really necessary to at least understand the stuff. Don't believe in it. Just know how to operate it. So my point is, at a very early age, because remember, I was in college. Most don't know that there was a We Charge Genocide rally that took place in New York in like 99, something like that. It was the Black United Front. Had it, and I was a student, right? So I went to that. I was a student. So my point is, for many years now, I've had this interest. Once it hit me where I needed to proceed or to go, I started doing independent research. And then began to come into a lot of information. Information really helped to develop greater strategies, et cetera. When I realized that Elhaj Malik al-Shabazz to Africa, when I realized why he went, who he met with, what, you know, I have the speech that he gave to the African Union at that time, requesting support for human rights in 1964. So,
right.
So my point is, right, now see, I have that information. We've researched it. I have papers from Dr. Robert Brock. Many don't know anything about him, but he started a committee and a campaign that was called the Self-Determination Committee. We're talking about in late 1950s, early into the 60s, Dr. Robert Brock. He was a lawyer, constitutional lawyer. I have some of his original papers. Also, Dr. Yusuf Klee. Dr. Yusuf Klee, if you read something called The International, he has several books. He was an advisor to Malcolm X. Queen Mother Moore was an advisor to Malcolm X. So what research, and it's an ongoing, believe me, it's some days I'm so tired that, you know, I have to make myself, you know, go to bed, go to sleep, or whatever. It's that much work, it's that much research. But again, it's a continual, it's a passion. And it's something that must happen. But those are some of the areas. Those are some of the research kinds of compilations. I mean, it's so much information. For example, Paul Robeson, most don't even know that he was a lawyer. Most don't know that when he made that stand, he became whiteballed, meaning he couldn't get a job in most cases, in most situations. You know, I mean, people turned on him. All of that. Also, William Patterson's papers, his actual papers are archived. Where are they? Howard University. This is the kind of research that we did. This is the kind of information that we're making readily available to our people. And lastly, we're reaching out to students, black students in particular, in law school or planning to go to law school, because they're going to be a cadre that we develop. Those that are in school, we will be trying to connect to their colleges and universities in hopes that the college and university will give them credit for the research and the other things that they do in working with this campaign. Because this is a lot of work. With the Black Human Rights Movement, each city, each state has to have their own research team, et cetera. And one of the things that each city or each state has to do is research slavery, enslavement of our people in your state. Because when we present this stuff to the United Nations, it has to be federal. And so by state, we need to be able to say, in the state of Louisiana, the primary focus of enslavement was this, 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 this. The state of Virginia, it was tobacco. And this is the companies, and this is the da-da-da-da-da. We have to be that concise, that capable.
Yes, ma'am.
You see, I'm in Pennsylvania. Every state had slavery at some point. And so that needs to be compiled, prepared, presented, and then put into educational formats for our children and for the future and for ourselves. The things I'm learning about Philadelphia, and not just the abolition stuff that they talked about, but the other stuff that they don't talk about, is amazing, amazing what these people did.
Wow. Indeed. Yeah, I can only imagine. Thank you so much, sister. That does give me a better perspective on my question, and thank you for your time.
Oh, it's indeed a pleasure, an honor, and a responsibility.
True indeed. Mama Blair, I want to open the line for a caller to have a question. 901-480-6590-1480, your line is open. You have a question, comment, statement for the guest. Please do so at your time. Your line is open, 901-480.
Freda Land, how you doing tonight, Sister Doctor? How you doing?
Oh, wonderful, my sister.
I'm Deputy Minister of Information for the Republic of New Africa. It is so nice to hear you on this call tonight. So very nice to hear you. Thank you for joining us. And, you know, listening to your story about the homegoing service of Queen Mother Moreweather, women couldn't speak at the podium, right? Being a woman that works with a lot of brothers in the struggle, and we deal with them, like with their egos and their misogyny, because most of our brothers are not focused on healing as much as the sisters are, right? How can we focus more on that for our brothers so that we can heal the entire family? Because I know I see a lot of sisters going to healing circles and, you know, getting more in touch spiritually and with their spirituality. And our brothers, unfortunately, are not doing.
Right. Well, Sister, I thank you for that question. And it would take a lot of time to really get into the depth of the answer, but I'm going to simplify it as best as possible. Because this is, you know, part of why I am the way I am in terms of the type of strength that I have is really to some degree because of some serious black men. So my point is, as a child, as a daughter, as a little girl, even though I didn't have my dad in my life very long, but the period of time that I did have him, I had these uncles. And they weren't my biological uncles, but they was my uncles. And they instilled in me that I was a princess. I'm talking about I'm 3, 4, 5 years old. Okay? I'm just real talk. Just real talk. That's why I tell people, I don't care what the hell y'all say or think, period. You understand? Because I've had black men that made sure that as I proceed, don't fuck with me. I'm sorry.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, so I'm saying it was because of brothers. It was because of black men who first put in me something. You see?
I see.
And I'm not afraid to say this. I'm not afraid to say. So even when my dad was no longer there, my parents divorced, I still had black men who adored me, who wouldn't let nothing happen to me. You understand? So my point is this. What women, our women, and our daughters have to do is honor themselves to the degree where you are not unnecessarily, don't get me wrong, there's of course variables to things. However, when I was going to get married a couple of years ago, I told the brother, I said, you've got to talk with Elder so-and-so, Brother so-and-so, and Brother so-and-so.
Yeah.
You see, before we can do this thing.
So
I'm saying that sisters, and that's why we created one of the sisterhoods that we have, which now has rites of passage and African woman development, because there's information that our sisters are not conveying to one another about many things, and we have to do better at that, because particularly now, there's a reason why our women feel the necessity of putting on these false eyelashes to the degree that they do. And sisters, if you were in I'm not trying to knock anybody, but I'm sure that everyone can agree that some of that stuff is absolutely ridiculous. It is not I don't have a problem with, you know, certain things because, you know, our people, when you look at Egypt or Kemet, we did certain things. But not to emulate white women.
Exactly.
That's a difference. That's a difference. Mm-hmm. And so there's nothing wrong with you know, the acceleration or excess, doing things to make it appeal in a kind of way that you want to, but that's not what's happening. And we know that. So yeah. Black women, we got to come together, sister. We've got to set some codes and ethics as Black women and make that clear.
Okay. I totally agree with you. And you really brought tears to my eyes because I was raised by my six uncles. My six uncles raised me. So
yes.
That's why I asked you that question, because they were the protectors. I didn't know anything about police and different things like that, because I called my Uncle Pinky, Uncle Wayne, Uncle Ray.
Yeah, there you go.
They
took
care of the community.
That's right. And so that's what we have to, and again, the brothers that I am connected to, they're not afraid of Black women. And I'm going to say it just like that. The brothers that I'm connected to who love me, who embrace me, and I them, they are very confident in their own Black manhood. So they don't see me as, oh, she's out of control, or she's angry, or she's – they be laughing at people like, y'all Negroes is crazy. Okay. They are so confident in them, in themselves as Black men, because they will hurt you. And so when you have a certain mentality and capability and understanding of certain things, and you know that this sister is genuine and real and fighting for our people, if you're doing and saying stuff like, oh, they're just trying to act like this, you're a punk.
Yep.
Really? Really?
Most definitely.
Really?
Right.
Because I've got some Black men who will tell you straight up, you know, that sister right there, no, y'all be real clear. That sister right there, you see, so this is what we have to deal with in terms of embrace the brothers who exemplify, demonstrate the characteristics, the elements of real Black manhood. That's what we have to do as women, you see. And the ones that aren't, you know, the ones that are salvageable, that we can save or help or whatever, fine. But if you can see that that's not going nowhere, you got to say, Tutanan.
I say. Thank you, Mom. Thank you so very much. Very. Oh, I love it. Thank you. And I yield.
All right. We appreciate it. Appreciate it, Sister Minister. I have one question for you. You mentioned a commemoration, a celebration that commemorate the legacy of Queen Mother Moore. If a person wanted to participate or contribute to it, how would they do it, go about doing so?
Again, just email us or call us or text us, and the schedule will be available tomorrow in terms of what we have thus far. And you know, if someone wants to submit something or do something, we'd be more than happy to you know, to welcome them to do so. If it's, you know, if it's in sync with what we're doing, then absolutely. I mean, you know, we're very transparent. You know, we're very inclusive. In fact, I don't know if you saw it or someone from the organization, from the nation rather, saw it, but we sent a message through your website. I think I might have mentioned it to you some time back, with Romani, that we wanted the Republic of New Africa to know that we're in full support of what the objectives are, the work, et cetera, and whatever we can do, meaning NWM, we want to make certain that we're able to do that. And again, this is based on not only the historical significance, the examples, because some of us have learned from, you know, I'm from Philly, straight up. So President Amari Obadeli, I saw him. I saw him when he was here going for his doctor's degree. You know, so again, there's an appreciation for certain things and realities, and there's an obligation. Like, we have our own thing that we do because that's the way it was given to us to do, and we're clear about that, and we don't apologize for that. What goes with that is recognizing others. You see, that's a part of that whole. And so that's why I have a problem with groups and organizations who now want to bash, say, for example, in Cobra or some other entity. I have some issues with that. I may not agree with, you know, what you did or didn't do or whatever, but I can't negate the history and the contributions. You can't do that. I know I wouldn't be saying some of the stuff that I'm saying and doing if Encobra hadn't existed. If Queen Mother Moore had not been one of the co-founders of Encobra and one of the co-founders or signers of the Republic of New Africa, I wouldn't be saying and doing what I'm doing. So I'm going to, like, you know, so people got to deal with reality of the contributions. This is like with me. A lot of people don't like me because I'm very upfront and can care less about a lot of things. That doesn't rest well with folk. I can be very diplomatic or not, you know, depending on the situation. But you are not going to disrespect or negate the work. We're going to have a real problem after that.
Yes, ma'am.
And that's how we have to proceed with this. This is not a popularity contest, but you must evaluate the work. Well, shut up.
Oh, no. True, indeed. That'd be a message you bring. I actually have a couple more callers that want to ask you a couple of questions, right? So I'm going to open up a line.
Sure.
I think my okay. 901-570, your line is open for any question, comment, or statement. We can do so at any time. 901-570, your line is open.
That's for you, I'm kind. Say it again. I said, that's my line. That's for you. Oh, okay. Thank you. I'm going to be real brief because my phone is acting a fool, which is why I called through. President Samaa, she was kind enough to patch me in, but I still can't hear real good because my phone is talking while y'all are talking, and it's talking while I'm talking. So I'm going to simply say, Dr. Empress, Queen Mama, Sister Daughter, Comrade, Million Woman March, worker, co-worker, I am proud of you. All this time, we are still in this struggle, and we're not allowing the protractedness of this struggle to discourage us. We are measuring our work not by individuals or personalities, but rather by the principle that we embrace and continue to do the work that is inspired by those principles. I'm proud of you. I love you. I am Elder Mama Condi, and I yield.
I shake, Mama. Give thanks. It's on to Sana.
Speaking to Sana.
Yeah, there's a few who from day one saw and understood and upheld, you know, what the ancestors gave us. And through thick and thin, you know, stayed in there, hung in there with us. And so Mama Condi is definitely one of them. I mean, she from day one has been there. And this is what we told people when we first started, that this was more than a moment. It was more than an event. And it would be more than an organization. or an organ. This was going to be a movement, and it has been complicated to build it, but we've done that now. Next year is our 25-year anniversary, and when people see what we have in store, oh, my gosh, and particularly the international connections that you're going to see that we've worked hard to bring about over these years. So, again, we've accomplished this phase of the mission. Most don't even know that the theme for the Million Woman March was the three R's, which was a tribute to our grandmothers and grandfathers from back in the day when they didn't have the capability to go to school, but they had and knew and understood principles and certain other things. And so the grandmom and grandpa would say, yeah, y'all got to get y'all reading, writing, and arithmetic right now. Remember that? Reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Right. True
so
indeed.
The Million Woman March adopted that concept in the spirit of it. And so I created the three R's. But for us, it represented repentance, resurrection, and restoration. Most don't even know that that was the theme, the three R's. But it was his great-grandparents who taught us we must know our reading, writing, and arithmetic.
True indeed. True indeed, Mama. I want to know your I got another person. I got another call right here. I want to ask a couple of questions. You know what I'm saying? Hold on right quick. Okay. Mm-hmm. 334-652, your line is open. You got questions, comments, statements. Leave this little entire line on 334-652.
Yes, this is Kamaki Amin. How are you doing today?
Greetings, my brother.
Greetings. How are you? I just had a question. I'm sorry, I'm driving, so it may come out a little bit choppy, but I'll try to articulate it as best as possible. And they're kind of two questions that run in concomitance with each other. So the first one, I would just like you to speak more on that conversation that you had with Baba Ancestor Kwame Ture, when he was speaking mm-hmm. to you about developing that women's wing of the AAPRP. What exactly did he say, and what's the reasoning behind that? I think that's a very interesting topic that would impact us if we had it in this conversation, you know. And then going even further beyond that, as far as being young African men in this struggle, what are certain, I know you were speaking how it wasn't necessarily like feminism that y'all were adopting, but there are different iterations and articulations of this. You know, some people practice what they would call womanism or decolonial feminism. What is it that we as young African men can do to ensure our contributions to upholding the security and the ultimate liberation of our system? You know, with what practices can we adopt? What things can we study? You know, I was just with a cadre that was reading Francis Bill's Double Jeopardy like last week. You know, what is it that you would advise us to work on as young African men? And I yield there.
Wow. Okay. So thank you for that question, or those questions, my brother. My conversation with Baba Kwame Ture was one that I cannot go into detail about, particularly not right at this point, because time would not allow us to do so. He sent for me. Again, see, there's traditions within the struggle that most are not aware of, because we're not really teaching some of it as well as we should. So he sent for me, as others should have and did not. And I said, particularly in terms of women, but I digress. To answer your question, our conversation was private, and I had the opportunity to literally, as we were talking, massage him because he was in a lot of pain. Again, this was, I think, in February of 1998, if I remember correctly, and he went home to Guinea to become an ancestor in November of 1998. So it was only a few months prior to his actual transition. So again, in talking with him, you know, I was able to, you know, to help and comfort him and so forth. And in those conversations, daughter, to, you know, father to daughter, brother to sister, you know, he shared things that was, you know, on his mind. But to answer your question, because in the development or, oh, I asked permission to continue my work. Again, that's a formality within struggle that some learn. That as you grow and develop in a certain position or in a certain contest or struggle, you need to talk to some of the elders who have been there and done that and run that by them if you're trying to continue to uphold a certain kind of legacy and tradition. Now, not to say that you are obligated or forced or whatever. It's a mere courtesy, and it is, in fact, a graceful and an honorable thing to do. So when I went there, I asked permission to continue the work that has been given, that I had envisioned, and that I wanted to do. He granted that permission because he was in the position to do that. I digress again. So sharing with me some of the problems in the earlier times or days of struggle within organizations, and particularly certain, you know, Pan-African nationalist organizations, The women oftentimes were not given their just dues or a certain type of appreciation. And within the AAPRP, at some point, that became problematic to the degree where the sisters got a little tired of it and said, yo, da 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 da. As a result, the brothers saw it, heard it, and agreed that something needs to change. And so the women's wing was developed to address some of those issues and to make certain that the sisters, that there was a lever, that there was an equal grounding there. So I hope that kind of answered your question. Now, the other question, sisters, well, in dealing with the issue of feminism, and I have teachings and classes that I do on that, why black women should not call themselves feminists, period. Period. And give you history as to why. If you're going to deal with the political philosophy, and that's okay because everything has a structure, then of course I would say study Dr. Cleona Weems, who do talk about African womanism and makes it very clear that there's no separation in terms of dealing with the liberation of our people. So if you do need that structure, it's there. However, I'm one that likes to create my own stuff. And that is to teach and have our women and girls to understand that we're the mother of civilization, period. That's not an ism. That's a reality. Now, within that, there's some teachings. But the bottom line is the black woman is the mother of civilization. Now, can you handle that? I mean, not you, brother, but again, in the teachings, you see. So we don't have to advocate to be a ism, a schism, a shit, whatever. We don't have to do that unless you just want to have that play, that game with that. But the bottom line is this is who we are. And how we define that is how we define that. You see? And again, there's some, you know, inside information on that. But again, we are addressing this situation now in a different manner. And so what we're saying is that the time has come where we do self-determination, but also, as we are taught in the Nguza Saba, to define ourselves, to name ourselves, et cetera. And that's what, as black women, that's what we're now going to do. You see, again, for some, they try to say black, you know. Why are you saying black? Because I deal with physics. So I can talk to you about a nationality or political context or whatever because I'm now striving to be a black internationalist, not just a black nationalist, from a theoretical political stance because everything needs to have a structure. So if somebody can say, well, I'm a Democrat, or somebody can say, I'm a Republican, I could say I'm a black internationalist politically. This is the type of stuff we have to, as women now, because remember, it is the women, it is the sisters who, go home. It is the sisters, and again, this is not feminism or anything like that. This is a reality. Many of our children are with the mother the first 5 years of their life, from conception to around the age five. The relationship with the mother is pretty almost exclusive. Mm-hmm. In many situations, that is all there is, right? So what we know is if we are going to strengthen, enable our women to be uplifted, what do you think that's going to do for the children? You see, this is not, it's not rocket science. This is just reality. What is going to help our women and our children, if the woman is more on point, you don't think that's going to help our children not to be? So again, this is simple mathematics. If a sister knows more about what to feed her child, what to feed herself, how is that going to affect the bigger scheme of things? We say these are some of the things that we have to begin to see as a reality. So I hope I've answered at least some parts of your question, my brother. Oh, and one other thing. MWM has several cadres. One of them is Brothers in Support. Our mission is to connect with black men of similar like minds who look at our agenda and like it and say, hey, we're going to support that as black men. And there's other aspects as well. So, again, contact me, and we'll be more than happy to give you, you know, whatever information you think you need or want.
Yes, ma'am, I will do so. And I thank you, humbly thank you for this conversation. It's been very enlightening, and I hope to work with you soon and support everything that you have going on with We Charge Genocide and also MWN.
All right. Well, brother, I thank you. And again, certainly feel free to contact me. I am very accessible. So please feel free to reach out. We would love to work with you and other brothers. And, you know, whatever we can collaborate on in terms of organizations, we certainly are amenable to it.
Yes, sister. Thank you. Free the land.
Free the land.
Okay. I'm going to play. What are your final thoughts? What are your final thoughts you're going to leave us with? Can you hear me? Mama Flay.
I'm sorry. Say it again.
I said, what are your final thoughts that what you're going to leave us with?
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, again, it as it has been said in years past, is, you know, what time is it? It's nation time. But that's also Ma'at time. We are approaching what I call a Ma'atic epoch, a time for Ma'at, truth, justice, reciprocity, honor, balance, righteousness, etc. Every group of people define periods of time. It is our time to define this time for us, for the future. And so I call it the Ma'atic epoch, just as other groups of people have called their periods of time the Baroque era, the Renaissance era, the, you know, Punic War era. What era are we calling what we want? And now have somebody else to define it for us. So we have a jump on it, and it is, of course, again, it's nation time, and it's Ma'at time. So this is what I convey to our people, and know that we've got to understand the lines are drawn in the sand now. The straddling of the fence can no longer be allowed, and we must now do the work that is necessary to be done in every way possible. And so this is what we are now working. This is now what we're actually doing. And again, we are open to work with any of our brothers and sisters that are of similar and like minds, which means unapologetic, no nonsense, and definitely very clear on what it is that we must do in this day and age for now as well as for the future.
Indeed. Again, I want to thank you. Appreciate you not understanding, coming to our platform to do so. And also, to everybody who's listening, Mama Filet will be on Georgia University Radio this Wednesday as a continuation of this conversation and to express more of this work. And also, I would like to let my co-host, Minister Akin, give final words as well. Your line is open, brother.
All right, my brother. Well, I thank you again, and I'm looking forward to talking to you on Wednesday.
Yes, ma'am. No doubt. You already know.
All right.
Brother Akin, your line is open, brother. You got final words, a comment?
Yes, I just want to say again, thank you to the sister for giving us your time, being on that show. We really do appreciate it. And a lot of what you're saying, as you mentioned, does have its roots in a lot of the organizations that came before us. So I know myself personally and also the brother minister, we just want to do what all we can do to leave those tidbits for the future generation so that when they look upon, you know, history, they'll be able to say that we did do some work to try to get it done, to get it changed, so that we can write our own history instead of having others write it for us. Thank you again.
Ashe.
Okay. If anybody interested in learning more about the Business of Global Africa, then go to our website, which is www.pg-rna.com. Upon going to the website, please make a profile, your profile, and the sign in so you get access to the full website. And if you are already a conscious New African citizen, we have a New African Census form, or you can be counting our nation. So, again, you can go to the website and sign up, pg-rna.com, and sign up and get access to the New African Census form. And along with the New African Independent Movement, we ought to catch a New African citizen, the New African political prisoner, the New African POW, free land.
Ashe.
And again, thank you, sisters, for coming onto our platform. And thank you for the work you contribute. Relax.
Well, again, my brother, it is indeed a pleasure and an honor. And one final thing and one final point is we must build our own independent institutions. Without our own independent institutions, we'll only repeat what has already happened. And so we can have all these conversations and so forth. But until we have our own schools, our own health facilities, our own capability to educate, to develop the spirituality systems, et cetera, for our people. Until we have those things in our communities, unfortunately, continue to repeat some of the madness.
True indeed. Appreciate that, sister.
Yep, thanks.